We turn to our second case, which is State Grand Valley School District versus Alexa Loveland and others. Are both parties ready? Same kind of, I noticed that both all the lawyers and most of the audience was here. So same admonitions, going for what I said this morning. Time is 44 minutes, both are minutes 22. Reach and the little yellow light will go on at 7.5 minutes. So please tell us who you are and who you represent when you start your argument. And so use our iPads for like surfing, sending that in. So with that, we're ready. Here for the petition.
May it please the court, my name is Tom Rice. I appear this morning on behalf of the St. Vrain School District and Ms. O'Donnell. Our case, of course, also concerns the statutory construction of the immunity waiver set forth at CRS 2410-1061E, that being the one that concerns the public facility exception. I would like to speak first to the Court of Appeals' reliance upon the 1968 committee reports as reflecting legislative intent with regard to the public facility exception. I think that that reliance is based upon false assumptions about the background of the report, and when we consider those assumptions, we find that that reliance was, of course, misplaced. First, to presume that 1968 committee reflected the then legislative intent of the 1971 General Assembly, I think, is a leap of faith. But even if we believe that, then we have to consider that the Court of Appeals stated that the report set forth proposed legislation that, and I quote, was adopted as the first version of the GIA. In fact, that's incorrect. The version of what became the public facility exception that is set forth in the 1968 report is very different from what was enacted by the 1971 legislature in May of 1971. As examples, what became subparagraph at that point, subparagraph F, had exceptions for parking facilities and public transportation, neither of which were in the committee report. They also removed a very important comma that made it clear that the public facility exception was speaking not just to parks and recreation facilities, but to public facilities in general. They also augmented the natural condition clause to extend beyond parks and rec areas. And if you compare the two, in short, what we find is that the public facility exception became law in 1971, well, enacted 71 became law in 72, was very different from that which was proposed by the committee report. It's thus hard to believe and that we can take the notes that were written by members of that 68 committee to be reflective of the 1971 legislature's intent. But there's more. The statute that we discuss here today is very different from the one that was enacted in 1971. In 1986, the General Assembly completely reworked these subsections of the Governmental Immunity Act and changed it in very material ways. So that to them, as an example, what we changed from F to E then collected the public facility of a park or recreation area with a whole variety of other civil infrastructure type of things, jails, hospitals, and I'll discuss these a little bit more later. But the clause that we construe here today is very different from that which first was enacted in the 71 legislature, but very different even still, the 1968 report.
I appreciate that. Could I ask you one specific about that?
Of course.
And that is, one interesting thing about the report was it seemed to really firmly be wanting to make the distinction between man-made objects, I think it used that phrase that broadly, and then things that were not, that were natural. Is there something about the difference in the changes, the amendments later from these original notes that would suggest a different meaning for facility or public facility?
Yes, in this sense. The original statute waived immunity for public facilities and then accepted things out of that. In 1986, when the legislature rewrote the statute, it instead replaced it with a listing of public facilities for which there would be waiver. So it's one is by exclusion, the other is by inclusion.
Except with regard to this one phrase that we talk about, which seems to then go back to in this location, in the recreation area, it just then talks about public facility.
Indeed, and that's the only place that it applies, because the word facility appears elsewhere, but this phrase public facility is used only to modify the park or recreation area. And that's different from what the 71 statute was. The 71 statute made it clear that when they eliminated that comma that was from the draft report, is that the public facilities were being spoken of generally as opposed to only specifically with regard to park or recreation area. So I think there is a difference. But whatever was meant by this comment about swing sets in the 1968 report strikes me as being a huge leap of faith to somehow then graft that onto the intent of the 1986 General Assembly. And so my point is this. In terms of divining legislative intent, we shouldn't look at all the 1968 report and trying to figure out what the legislature thought in 1986 when they amended the statute.
Are you saying we should look at the legislative history of 1986 and none, including the hearings? I mean, what?
And I think we'll find little guidance there.
Yeah.
So the question then becomes, and I know the question that was asked in the earlier argument, and the question that you have on your minds is, what then does this public facility modifier mean in the context of the statute? I mean, that is the question we're here to address. And my answer to that is that we should consider it as the basic infrastructure that occurs with regard to a given park or recreation facility. And the reason I say that is that if we look at, in subparagraph E, what this public facility exception is grouped with, we find hospital, jail, water, gas, sanitation, electrical, power, swimming. All those things have one thing in common. They are various forms of civil infrastructure or utility. And so if we consider the public facility exception that we're discussing here today in the context of what it's grouped with, I think that's where we find our clarity of understanding. This should be distinguished then from the things that might be collected within the public facility. Those things like equipment, apparatus, things like that that might be found in public facility, but do not themselves make up the public facility.
So they're not covered by the waiver, I mean, is that where you're going?
I'm sorry?
They're not covered by the waiver, is that where you're going?
Yes, indeed.
Whereas, it wouldn't it be more logical to say the natural condition is distinguished from man-made facilities? Let's take Cherry Creek State Park. There's plenty of rabbit holes, gopher holes, skunk holes, things to break your leg in. But if they build a park facility, recreation facility, a playground within Cherry Creek Park, isn't it the intent that that might be within this exception?
But the problem with that is that then it becomes almost impossible to find a limiting definition where we don't include everything. Getting to Justice Eye's point from the earlier argument, if we say that it's basically any man-made device in a park or recreation facility, then what we have in essence done is written the words public facility out of the sentence. You might as well just say a dangerous condition located in a park or recreation facility.
But that would seem to cover a natural condition as well, which is clearly intended to be excluded, right?
Because of the second part of that exception, which says this shall not stop the public entity from raising that as a defense. So, but to me, it doesn't satisfy the question to simply say man-made versus non-man-made, because to do that, we have given no meaning to the word public facility. It might as well not even exist in that sentence because everything is included. So in my example, if the track ride or zip line that's involved in our case is a public facility, would not then a badminton set be the same thing?
Would it be a public facility, Mr. Rice, if it was connected on one of those climbing walls, and the climbing wall was on the the building?
If that was a part of the basic infrastructure, so let's suppose...
So then that becomes part of an infrastructure, so to speak.
That's right, and that would be akin to the large water slide.
Right.
In the Highland Hills case.
So, just to think this through, then it almost, your definition almost depends on how something is built on the playground. Whether it's attached, whether it's built as part of the building. Ostensibly, I suppose if this zip line came from one end of the building out into the middle of the yard itself, then it would be a public facility.
Right. Because then that becomes a part of the basic infrastructure of the facility, as opposed to the things collected therein.
That distinction doesn't seem somewhat artificial to you?
Well, it is an attempt to attach meaning to the word public facility in that sentence. And it seems to me to be as reasonable an interpretation as any other. Because again, we look at the character of the things that it's collected with, and what we find is these are all big public infrastructure type projects. The Denmark case is interesting because it doesn't provide as much guidance with regard to the public facility issue, because quite frankly, that wasn't even raised. The argument in Denmark was whether or not it was a recreational facility at all because of the enabling legislation that created that land to be used for educational purposes. But I think Denmark is useful in the sense of this. They built a field there. They built a football field there to be played on. Not a natural condition anymore, Justice Hodge, but something that was created there. That football field with a track around it, in my view, would become part of the basic civil infrastructure of that facility. But would a hurdle that can be moved here and about on the track be considered part of the public facility? And in my construct, I would say no. That's so, not something we...
So in your construct, the only reason this particular zip line isn't part of the public facility is because it was freestanding?
Yes. And it's more in the nature of equipment, things
it's
brought into
more
the
like
facility.
A swing set than like a climbing wall.
Right.
But if the climbing wall were freestanding, so to speak, then that would be not public facility.
Yeah. Well, let's suppose it was a movable climbing wall that they rented and they brought in and set up and somebody fell off. I would say that's not a part of the public facility in a park or recreation area.
Go ahead.
Can a playground be a public facility? Not a specific piece of equipment, but collectively the area itself?
No.
And why not?
Because that's not a part of the basic infrastructure of the facility. Those are just simply parts of the equipment that have been brought in and can be changed from time to time.
And yet it facilitates a public purpose. It's open to the public. Children can access it. It serves a recreation purpose. And so I guess I'm still struggling with why the equipment itself could not be the public facility, and then distinguishing that from calling the zip line itself a facility unto itself. Hmm. I mean, arguably, the way I'm conceiving of this is the argument could be that the zip line presents a dangerous condition, but the public facility is the playground, not the zip line.
So the playground as a whole
could be a public facility, and then we have perhaps a broken swing set or some dangerous condition within that facility. For which you might be waived. And that, if that were sort of the construct here, are you saying that immunity is waived for the broken swing set or something that presents a hazard to a child who plays on that equipment?
The potential anomaly here, though, is that if we have a zip line that is hooked up with a jungle gym and a swing set, some other things, and becomes a part of a playground, then we would find that there's waiver for that. Whereas if on a different playground, we simply had a zip line that was brought in and set on top of the concrete play surface, that wouldn't be. And if once we start to move into the area of saying that all man-made devices that are in the recreation facility, which is the recreation area, become a public facility, then there's no limiting rule whatsoever.
Well, dangerous condition. I mean, there's more. I mean, is there not? I mean, the problem is you're asking us to use a word, infrastructure, that's not anywhere that I can find unless you point it to me. And substitute that for facility, which is probably, if you looked at the dictionary, I don't know what the dictionary definitions would say. Let's hear your response to that. Isn't facility more of a general
word than the infrastructure, which you're trying to attach a very specific kind of meaning to.
Yeah. And any number of the Court of Appeals decisions on this issue have used the dictionary definition.
Yeah.
And of course, it varies a little bit depending upon which dictionary one picks up. And of course, it varies depending upon which portion of the definition you choose. And so there's a little bit of danger in using dictionary definitions. To me, the way to gain some understanding as to what was intended here by the legislature in 1986 is to look at what they grouped it with. They grouped it with all these things that are permanent structures, permanent civil infrastructure. That's what all these things are. And in the ground swimming pool, we would all consider that to be civil infrastructure. A sanitation sewer, electrical lines, power lines, gas lines, all these kinds of things are what it is grouped with. And I think that's what we find the context and the meaning we can attach to it.
Mr. Rice, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Rice, isn't the zip line probably cemented into the ground and somewhat permanent? I mean, I didn't see any factual finding that said that somebody had set that up on a temporary basis, like a jumpy castle.
Right.
I mean, it's...
And in fact, in this particular case, the court moved directly to order on the motion to dismiss without having an attorney hearing. So the record is somewhat abbreviated in this regard.
But, okay, so I guess then to follow up, how would that be different than electrical lines or sewer lines? I mean, they're somehow permanently affixed. I mean, there's always going to be construction and removal and modification.
But abandoned set would be implanted into the ground as well.
But it would be stuck but not cemented.
Well, let's just say that we have a volleyball and that gets cemented in the ground. Would we call that a public facility? And how can we draw a distinction between that and my abandoned set? This is the problem that the Court of Appeals has found itself in, and this is why the case is seemingly so inconsistent, is because once one starts marching down this line of expansive interpretation, there becomes no limiting point whatsoever. And so the golf cart case, Montes versus Highland Hills, is probably most like our case because it's a mechanical device that was brought into the facility. And in Montes, of course, they found that it was not a part of a public facility. But if we took the test that the Court of Appeals used here in our case and applied that to Montes, I think one would be hard-pressed to not come out in favor of finding that the golf cart was indeed a public facility. Because the test that was announced by the Court of Appeals here was that device is, number one, man-made, number two, that it was a mechanical device, and number three, that it was installed for the purpose and function of providing recreation. And in Rosales versus Denver, the Court of Appeals used a phraseology, built, constructed, installed, or established to perform a particular function. Well, all those things can be said about the golf cart. And so what we end up with then is a situation where there is no limitation whatsoever that's attached to the words public facility. And instead, we have all dangerous conditions located in a park or recreation area.
All man-made dangerous conditions.
There you go. Sure enough, because there is a limitation for the
management. Let me just turn around your slippery slope argument. If it's impossible to draw a line, as I think you were pointing out in your response to Justice Boatwright, why doesn't that lead us to the conclusion that the legislature didn't intend for a line to be drawn, but rather intended to include all objects that were constructed by the public entity?
So then why include the words public facility if they have no meaning?
Well, they do have meaning. Don't they describe if construed as broadly as many of the Court of Appeals cases have? Facility, meaning that broad, anything that facilitates something, then don't they have meaning? Isn't that the way of saying it's a man-made, it's something that's constructed by the public entity to facilitate something for the public?
But Justice Coase, we can get the same place with leaving the words out.
You have to substitute something similar.
Maybe we just say a dangerous condition located in a park or recreation area.
Well, but then we haven't limited it to man-made objects.
Because
it's made by the public entity.
Because as we know, the dangerous condition definition includes the word facility. So it really
includes, but is not limited to.
Right. It says that it has to do with the physical condition of a facility, what the definition says. So my view is that if we don't attach some meaning to the words public facility, then we basically have gotten to the same place we would have been if we just left them out altogether. And so we have to try and assign some meaning to those words. And I think the neighborhood that they're collecting in, all those other types of facilities, is the best guidance that we can find that provides some useful definition.
So then, under your definition, what would constitute, what would fall within your definition of a public facility in a park or recreation area?
So, a swimming pool, of course, that would
fall. Well, that's
a specific exception. But as I said, in the Denmark case, the running track and football field was constructed. That's the basic core element of that civil infrastructure.
Mr. Rice, let me ask you a question. It seems to me like you're postulating almost something that would be more akin, or that is akin, to property law. You know, what you have to leave behind when you sell a house. You get to take the refrigerator, but you've got to leave the built-in bookcases. I mean, is that kind of what you're saying? And if it's so attached to the property, to the land, almost like a property concept, then in fact it becomes part of a public facility.
Public facility, indeed.
But if it isn't,
then
it's
not.
Gone.
Exactly.
So is that an apt way to think about your argument?
I think so, and think of it in this context. That one of the cases makes reference to CRS 297107 and the definition of a recreational facility that's included in that. And that particular statute is actually on point with regard to our case, because it speaks not just to special districts but also to school districts, to the extent that they operate recreational facilities. And the definition of recreational facility there is land or interest in land, a real property concept, just as you have stated, Justice.
So I mean, I think that's an interesting way to think about this issue. Your support for thinking about it this way, though, is pretty much limited to the fact that this concept of public facility is included in the part of the statute which deals with other things that are like real property.
All real property, exactly.
And you have anything else that would support this position?
I think that this is a matter of first impression for this.
Sure.
Court.
I mean, there's some logic behind what you're saying, but if we were to dig into the statute and drill down, that's basically where we would come up with this proposition.
I think what we're left with is that in 1986, they reworked the statute and they put the public facility exception with these other things, and that we have to try and divine some.
Well, I think that's illuminating discussion, because now you want us to substitute improvements, a real estate property concept, improvements, which again is not a word that they chose. Improvements are what you have to leave with the property.
Well, they're not using any of these words, which is what's interesting about your theory, and that's why I wanted to drill down on it a little bit. I mean, I understand your sense that this is an extraordinarily logical way to look at it, but how do we go from your logic to the words of the statute, public facility, except the statute couple?
Because the only alternative is to have no rule at all. And then everything that's contained or located in a park or recreation area becomes a public facility. That's the only alternative. So we have to try and find some reasonable means to define what that term is, because it's clearly a limiting term.
Mm-hmm.
It was put there for a reason. So I see I have the red light on. So thank you for your attention.
Are there any other questions?
Thank you, Mr.
Rice. Thank you, Mr. Rice. Mr. Thompson.
May it please the court. My name is Mike Thompson, and I represent Randy and Mary Nicole Loveland, who are the parents of Alexa Loveland. The problem. I've got a couple problems with the petitioner's argument here, as I've laid out pretty clearly, I think, in my briefing. But primarily, and particularly going in onto what Mr. Rice is saying today, is to go with this interpretation of public facility would require this court to reverse its decision in Corsentino. I see no way that you can interpret public facility in the way that Mr. Rice is arguing for today and still say that the Corsentino decision, which says that this court strictly construes exceptions to the waiver, and do that. He's trying to make an argument that this somehow public facility has no meaning if you go with the definition that we're arguing for, and I don't see that either, because you've got to turn around and argue away a number of things. For one, the phrase that comes immediately after this sentence, differentiating between man-made objects and unimproved property. The public facility phrase works with that. It also, if you look at the Gallegos decision, which while this court in Corsentino reversed its statutory interpretation stuff, Gallegos still contains some important stuff for this case. Gallegos shows another way that public facility could matter, in that in Gallegos, the Supreme Court held that these water meters that were in people's backyards weren't facilitating the public in general, they were just helping the specific property. So there's another example of how the phrase public facility has meaning. And as the other case law, both in the Court of Appeals and here, have done for the public facility phrase itself, it's to say this is something built for the public good. That's what public facility hits you. And yes, it's a broad phrase. That's why it was used, and there's, I mean, where you get help from that, as I've pointed out previously on a number of occasions, this whole 106 has a whole bunch of waivers in it. The interpretation of public facility that's been pursued by petitioners in this case is, if not identical to public building, it's so slight in differences to mean nothing. We're not, now today for the first time it sounds like maybe a wall constructed on the property would be a public facility and maybe not a public building, but I'm not sure about why that is any different than a playground equipment that is affixed to the property.
Well, take for example those places where kids skateboard, you know, down by the highway. Is that a public facility?
In this case, it doesn't come close to that kind of scenario, obviously. So, but in terms of defining public facility, I think you look again at the entirety of the section, which says in a recreation area, if you can find that that's it within a recreation area.
Well, I'm just curious, if you wouldn't mind kind of focusing on that, because, and maybe I'll get a chance to ask Mr. Rice about this, but it would seem to me that under his definition, that entire skate park, which I think is what it's called, would be a public facility because it is built there. It's the property with all the dips and curves and jumps and all the rest of that.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that.
Whereas on a park or in a schoolyard, you know, if you have kids skateboarding on the sidewalk, well, that might not be a public facility.
Well, I think some of the other cases here today present that question
a little closer than ours. I'm interested in your perspective on that, if you wouldn't mind, please.
My perspective, again, is that you have to look through it through the interpretations that this court has laid out before, which is that you are to strictly construe exceptions to the waiver. And if you do that, in looking at 1E, I think that's a public facility. I think it fits within the definition. And to do, because it is not, it certainly isn't an exception to the waiver that's specifically laid out in the phrase afterwards. And the strong argument can be made, and I will suggest to you that I think this is the way the court should look at it. If you're going to strictly construe exceptions, you have the exception to what in 1E that matters written out for you, and that exception doesn't take away that situation.
I'll just ask one more question to try to come at it from a different direction. Assuming that we should strictly construe exceptions, can you give me an example of what, even after we have strictly construed it, would not constitute a public facility in the playground context?
In the playground I would struggle with, I think, you know, Mr. Rice, for obvious reasons, wants to identify the Montez case as his best case. But I think Montez might point out to you what is in the public facility. It's something being used to kind of drive through the park, you know, a car being driven through the park or something. If that is the dangerous condition, I don't think that it's in the 1E public facility definition. If you're defining something, it's not attached to anything, it may not, it's not going to stay in the park. Maybe if it, I would maybe make it part of the park if it was part of, like, you know, a bumper car set up in the park.
So your definition is sort of, not all that dissimilar. It's got to be movable, transit, is that what you're basically saying?
I think the facility modifies those out, unless they're actually part of the facility, like a bumper car setup.
But what you are distinguishing is whether something is temporary, is transitory, is movable, and in those cases, you think it would not be part of a public facility. So if I'm hearing this correctly, there is some degree of permanence that both you and Mr. Rice are agreeing to. It's just what degree of permanence that we seem to be arguing.
Yeah, and I think it's a small, my issue on the permanence is more about the whether or not the this movable object is part of the what the facility is doing, the purpose of the facility, that kind of thing. Something that's movable can pass through the facility and not automatically become part of the public facility. Again, I mean, as I want to make sure for my client purposes, that I think that this is a long way from our circumstance, unless you get that a vehicle coming through or a golf cart coming through is a long ways from a swing set or a zip line, which is affixed to the ground in a playground area. The problem with the definition that's happening here is a couple of things. Is one, we never had any, we didn't even allow a hearing on that issue in the trial court. So I think we're at least entitled to that, where that would be the case. But on another level, I just don't see under this definition, you're essentially giving complete immunity to the school districts around the state for playground equipment. I suppose with some exception, if the court put it in a specific decision about a wall that was constructed, that is the only thing that has been suggested in this process that might not fit in this playground equipment immunity. And I want to address it because it's come up here, and it came up earlier this morning, and I'm sure it's going to come up later today. This is all being argued underneath this public policy issue that somehow what we're arguing for is going to put school districts or governmental entities with parks subject them to unlimited liability. I mean, as all of you know, CGIA does not even remotely subject governmental entities to unlimited liability. The statute contains a lot more than just this phrase.
Well, you're talking about monetary caps.
I am. It's part of what I'm referencing is that definitely monetary caps.
What else?
The other hurdles for particularly this situation where even best case scenario for us, if you send us back down the trial court, we're going to probably have to go through a Trinity hearing, which I have to establish that the zip line constituted a dangerous condition. This is another significant hurdle for anyone taking on these kind of cases. I don't think with those, both the monetary caps and that dangerous condition hurdle, to say that if you define public facility this way, suddenly school districts across the state are going to be facing millions and millions of dollars of lawsuits. I think that's a heck of a leap.
Council Gray, just one minute on that. Is it your theory of the case that the zip line was an inherently dangerous condition? The mere existence of the zip line was itself a dangerous condition, or that there was something faulty with the zip line that caused the student to fall?
Again, there's no finding, we're not any findings of fact before the court in the nature of where we're at, but it is our position that this zip line was presented itself as a dangerous condition, that there was nothing constructed improperly by the zip line in terms of what the zip line manufacturer, how it wanted it installed.
Or that it was negligently maintained in some way, the line broke or something like that.
Yeah, I think that might push my, I think in the maintenance of it, the manufacturers even put out notice of the fact that it needs to be supervision for the kids to be able to use it, that kind of thing. So I probably won't rightly, broadly.
Well, what was your allegation?
Yeah.
But the allegations in this case are that Ms. Loveland was the third child to have broken something on this zip line within a month of its installation. In the days and weeks leading up to when Ms. Loveland fell from the school, because of other incidents, changed policies that only be allowing fourth and fifth graders to use it, which it also requires supervision just to make sure that's what's going on. So there were allegations that the things that happened on the before. We also allegations that these zip lines have been a problem throughout the country in elementary schools as well. We'd go into if we were to have a hearing on the dangerous condition.
Council, can I make a follow-up though, just your allegations, how they fit the statute? So I guess under your theory, the dangerous condition is the zip line, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Of any public facility, how do you define a public facility? Not, I don't mean generally, I mean for your case. What are you saying is the public? You can't say the zip line again is the public facility, or is the dangerous condition equal to the public facility in your theory?
Under my fitness, the zip line is the dangerous condition. I think it's a good question as to whether or not the zip line is what has to be a public facility or the whole playground area itself. I've taken the position that it's the zip line is a public facility, but I think there's a pretty good argument that it's the zip line is contained within a public facility and it's a dangerous condition.
Okay, so the zip line is the dangerous condition and the public facility is the zip line again? I'm just really trying to understand your theory.
My theory is that the zip line is a public facility that happens to also be contained within an area that I think is also a public facility. So either one.
Either one. Well, that's why then I'll continue down the statute, located in any park or recreation area maintained by a public entity. How does that apply to your case? What do you fill in for that?
I believe that it's undisputed that this is located in a public recreation area, but it is the recreation area for the school. I don't believe it's in dispute as to whether or not it was in the playground area where the kids recreated. So I don't think there's an argument in this case that that's not a recreation area.
And I agree with that. I just am trying to separate what you say is the public facility versus what you say is the recreation area versus what you say is the dangerous condition. I mean, those seem to be three requirements.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think that they have to be three different things.
Okay.
What I'm saying is I think that the zip line is a public facility. It happens to be within a public facility, which is the playground area, and that playground area also is the recreation area. If it wasn't a recreation area, I'd have a problem. if the playground wasn't a public facility, I may also have a problem. If the zip line wasn't a public facility.
But you have to make some kind of allegation for this Trinity hearing, right? So I want to get back to that. You know those rings that you go across? So, you know, if you don't grab the next one, you fall and you can fracture. Is that a dangerous condition?
I believe that the zip line, given that it's put in an elementary school, the construct here is a dangerous condition, yes.
I don't get it. I ask you a different question.
You're
focusing on the individual pieces of equipment in the playground. This zip line apparently does what it's supposed to do. It zips you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your position about those rings that you have? If you don't make the next one, you fall. Is that a dangerous condition? Are we trying to take apart the playground here under your argument?
I do believe that having that construct on a playground at an elementary school is a dangerous condition, yes. The handles that you're reaching across above ground for the age level of the kids that are out there.
Well, what's the difference between that and some sort of negligent supervision theory? I mean, keep the younger kids off these things. I mean, aren't you kind of wandering into a different theory of liability here?
No, I don't think so, because it's connected to the use. One is the manufacturer's requiring the supervision. It's not the use of the equipment requires that supervision. I'm not saying that the supervision was poor. I'm saying our allegation is that it wasn't existent, as it was, as the manufacturer itself warned that it should be.
Before you get run out of time too much on this, I'm going to take you in a slightly different direction that I'm kind of curious about, particularly with regard to the school rail theory. We've mostly, in the argument before and this argument so far, been talking about facility and what a facility really means, how broad it is. But let me focus on the public part with regard to this case. I guess I want to get your sense about what it means to be a public facility, and particularly with regard, I mean, this kind of takes me back to the gas meter case you were talking about earlier. Presumably that doesn't just mean that it's made or maintained by the public entity, but rather it's there to facilitate something for the public. Is that your notion of the public? Well, let me just turn it around and ask you, what do you take public to mean as modifying facility?
Well, I think it needs to be something that's available or there for the public. And in this case, as it matters to this case, it's not an enclosed area that's shut off from public. It's not just for public school students, which I think is also available for the public. It's available for the public. But in addition to that, it's available for the entire community to use. There's no rule against
That's what I was asking. Yes. So this, in a sense, the place you've got here, you're saying the public generally is invited to use it as they would any park, any public park.
Yes, there's no rule against the non-students using this park.
Well, let me just use that. Let's assume that you're right in your case, but it helps me narrow what we mean by public. And suppose that were not the case, and it were exclusively for the students of this school. Would it still be considered a public facility, do you think?
I think it should be, because the students are, in this sense, the public. And it's a school that's open to attendance from the public's.
And it wouldn't matter that it's a limited part of the public, that only this exclusive group can use it.
I think it's broad. When you have it for public school children, that's broader than the water meter scenario, which is in somebody's backyard.
Presumably that one was because it's to help out the people who measure the water, not for the public to use.
Yes.
But let's take, for instance, something that's clearly a public, the school, if it's open to the public generally. But if it has one section that is only for the teachers to use for recreation, and a student got in there and got hurt, would that be considered a public facility, even if it's directly designated for some particular usage, which is not the public generally, who is going to have to pay for this?
I think that's an interesting question, but certainly is another potential area where the public facility term has definition. I think it's possible. That's a tougher call for me. I just haven't considered it until you would ask that.
And I don't mean to just get off and try to ask something that's kind of weird. It seems to me that may have some relationship to how we define facility, might it not? That is not just anything man-made by the entity, but rather something made by the entity to which the general public, who is going to be responsible for injuries here, is invited.
I agree with that. I believe that that the term public facility is a phrase, not two separate words, I think the term in the statute is meant to work together. The public facility, it has a meaning to itself.
And so in a park generally, then your thought would be, if there's a park or a recreation area and there is something that's constructed, but it's not really for the public to benefit from, it's rather for the park officials to benefit from in the way they handle the park or whatever.
And if somebody gets injured by that, then presumably, under your theory, that would not be a public facility.
I think that would be problematic with the phrase public facility.
So like a locked maintenance shed or something like that that holds lawnmower equipment?
Yes. I think that's problematic for a public facility. I think, and that again, your area here, and I was, this is what I was trying to reference earlier with the Gallegos case itself, where you get definition from public facility without, you don't make it unnecessary. I think if you take public facility out, it changes a lot in the statute.
Mr. Thompson, do you think that the legislature intended potentially to have the schools lock up their playgrounds so kids can't use it? I mean, under your, does that not impact what the intent of the legislature was by doing that?
No, I don't at all. That's part of why I wanted to address this unlimited liability thing. What potential plaintiffs still have and hurdles to overcome, and you can even hear the questions I still have to overcome in this case, makes it seem, it's not even close to an unlimited liability situation. These are hard cases, even if I had broke the Supreme Court opinion myself.
But every playground that I've ever seen for kids has something they climb up and that they can fall off of, the rings, the jungle gym. Rockets. I mean, there's all kinds of things they climb on. That's one of the purposes of it. So anything with height, by this definition, is going to be dangerous.
Yep. And Justice, all at this point where this our case is today is we're asking for an opportunity to have a hearing as to whether or not this, in this situation, it was a dangerous condition. What the ruling of the trial court said in this case is essentially that complete immunity. The problem I see really is the reverse. It's that if this court rules against my clients, I don't see how there isn't complete immunity for all playground equipment in public schools in the state of Colorado. I just don't see. And that, to me, that can't be the case, particularly when you have this dangerous condition modifier to it, which still requires a major hurdle for plaintiffs to overcome. They still have to show that playground equipment was dangerous condition. And I will have to deal with your argument at a hearing, obviously, too. I agree with you, it's a hurdle that I have to overcome. But right now, essentially what's happening is saying that we don't even have to show it. We're not even getting an opportunity to show that it's a dangerous condition. There's immunity.
Thank you.
Are there other questions? Hearing none, Mr. Thompson, do you have a sentence or two you want to sum up?
No, in reference, go back to the fact that I think it's important what happened in the Gallegos and Corsentino cases, and it's been in effect now for 12, 13 years in the state. The legislature knows that and has not chosen to do anything to modify it, and this court shouldn't change its rulings on those cases. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I thank both attorneys for your arguments. The case will be submitted on the briefs, and we'll turn to our next case.